in the economics profession would appear not to share that skill.
Bob's different, mate. He's competent.
No, I know there are really good economists. And then there's
Bob.
There's Bob. Hello, welcome to the big show. We started with five. We're down to three within 10 minutes. James Forrester's getting grief off his wife to go out for dinner because he thought the show was 7 o'clock, not eight. And right at the start of the show, Atlee's wife got bitten by something, but he didn't say what she was bitten by.
A bear.
So, yeah, if it's because he lives in Canada, it could well be a bear or a wild animal of some size, and he's running out with a gun to try and solve the problem. We don't know. We'll let you update it if we do have it. But it's okay. We've had some great shows with three people, just not these three.
I'm going to bring Infinity as my story now.
No, don't. So we're here to discuss all the big shows, all the big stuff that's gone on in tech, all the shiz that's been happening that's well worth talking about, and it should be good. And the only problem I've got is I didn't bring a story because I thought there was five of us, and now I've got to find a story. So I will be killing for time and not listening particularly hard while these two do their story. Starting us off, Bart, how the devil are you, man?
I am grand. You're kind of lucky I made it here at all because I ended up getting delayed in work and I literally skidded around the corner at 1 minute to eight and sat down in my chair. So
I'm sorry, mate. Have you had no tea or nothing? You've had no tea, no nothing?
Oh, okay. No, I got home from work, threw food together, stuffed it into my face, good, and then skidded in and sat down with 1 minute to spare is the actual honest answer. And yes, I made time for coffee because otherwise, mate, I won't function.
Excellent. And you made your bed for us.
No,
I know you didn't.
Yet again, didn't have a chance. That is how I crawled out of it this morning.
Welcome, mate. Glad to have you back always. Next, David Smuller.
Hello, mate.
How you doing?
Yeah, he's lucky. I haven't nothing to eat yet.
Yeah, but you eat like once every 3 days, don't you?
Yeah.
You're like a camel.
Yeah. Now that's water.
You've got the hump for it as well.
Yeah. No, I'm afraid I drink like a fish.
Yeah. Good to have you as well, mate. So it's going to be an interesting show because you better not rattle through your stories too quickly, otherwise I'm knackered. I will be going to the end. I've got a few in mind, but there we go. Right, Bart, would you like to start us off, mate?
Okay, well, I think it's time we all did some saving because NASA have decided that the International Space Station should be commercialized to some extent. Now, they're not going completely bonkers, so they're not just saying anyone can do anything. They're going to reserve 5% of resources and 5% of astronaut time for commercial exploitation of the International Space Station. They do have some rules, partly about protecting their space station, and I think there might also be a bit of a filter by the price tag. There is, however, a price list available online. If you'd like to bring something with you, that will be $3,000 per kilogram. If you'd like to bring it back down as trash, that will be another 3,000 kilograms. Or if you'd like to bring it back not as trash, that will be 6,000 kilograms, please, unless it needs life support, in which case there's an extra fee for that.
When you say 6,000 kilograms, you mean
$6,000, yes.
Oh, okay.
$6,000 per kilogram. Yeah, sorry. These are prices per kilogram. Apologies. Yes. So $3,000 per kilogram, $6,000 per kilogram. If you'd like to go up as a human being.
Oh, cool.
The cheapest you can get up there for is $11,250 per crew day.
That sounds really cheap.
But yeah, the thing is, that sort of gives you extremely little stuff. So actually to have a livable experience up there, you kind of need food and other provisions, so that actually comes to $22,500.
I thought that included food. Bastards.
You take a bacon sandwich with you.
I guess if you go up for like a long weekend, or maybe you can go up for like a one-nighter or something.
So what that's suggesting is I eat my own weight in food every day.
It is kind of. And I'm wondering if you're allowed to use
maybe
the
a year ago.
You haven't paid the higher fee.
Oh, mate, that's maybe a year ago, perhaps. I don't know.
It's on the one hand, it's kind of, I mean, for you and I, 22 grand is, well, it's not happening for me, and I can't speak for you, but for
it's
me,
not happening for me either. Well, no, it's not happening for me. Sell the house for 10 days in space.
Like, that's well within the range of an awful lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what's his face? Tito, the first ever space tourist, paid a couple of million to go up for
But hang on, don't forget, you've got to get it's kind of a scheduled flight.
Yes, you don't get to go whenever you like.
Exactly. So you've got to go up when it's time to go up. You've got all the training to do, and there's probably costs for the training. And
you have to learn Russian.
You've probably got to learn Russian. And then you've got to come back when they say as well. You can't, like, if you fart and it's like, oh, Jesus, I'm sorry, fellas, I'm off.
Not happening. Or you get ill or something. Yeah, no, sorry, exactly. Not happening. Yeah.
Sorry.
It is a bit. Yeah, it's like going to a hotel in the middle of nowhere where there's no taxis around. You are kind of stuck for as long as your mission is, yeah.
Uber space.
Can't you do like a Baumgarten and just dive out and do a parachute jump?
I think it's a little too high. I think you may find yourself in co-orbit with the ISS for some time until the atmospheric drag eventually brings you down.
Yeah, I think and it is it's a kind of a Vindaloo entrance as well.
Yeah, you'll have one hell of a fiery backside, frontside, every which side.
Well, he nearly died, didn't he? Passed out for a bit.
Well, he went into a horrible spin and basically knocked himself out, yeah.
I don't know how he got into a horrible spin, because there was no... He jumped out. He must have jumped out with like a fraction of rotation, like a real tiny bit of rotation that just accelerated, because there was no atmosphere working on him to do that, was there? Wasn't like his arms
were tilted. But that's it, exactly. So normally, if you start to spin a little bit, you can move your arms or whatever, and you get some purchase on the air to stop the spin. But because the air was so thin, his tiny little bit of angular momentum
just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
And he couldn't arrest it.
Yeah,
which is very scary stuff.
It is. So money no object, Bart. Would you be up there?
I'm not sure I'd go all the way to the ISS. I think I'd probably try out, take a spin with Richard Branson and see how I do. Because I sort of get travel sick in cars. Well, I'm okay on planes.
Oh,
so maybe spaceships would be
You got the option of going to space. Do you fancy it? Well, I get car sick.
Yeah, but right, you just said it yourself. If you go up, you're committed for a week. Do you imagine barfing your guts out for a week with no ability to come down? Floating in your own vomit for a week?
No, they've got bags, mate. Steady on. But hey, maybe
bugger all good if there's no gravity.
Maybe if you every time you chuck up though, that's a kilo's worth of cargo Steaming. You've got to pay to come back and trash. So that's £3,000 every time you vomit.
Yeah, but I won't be eating, so I'll get my money back for the food.
Oh no, because they'd send it up, and it'll go off.
I'll save it for a friend. So no, keep it up here. I'll send the mate around. Ewan is coming up next. He can have my food.
Yeah, get up, make it some sort of experiment. See how long it lasts.
Oh, just imagine if the summit goes wrong and Bart's got to go and do a spacewalk. Worse still, Muller's got to go and do a spacewalk.
I think
and they were worried about the girl fitting in the suit.
I'm going to say there's a weight.
Well, I'm fairly practical with a screwdriver and stuff, so maybe I wouldn't be the worst person to send out in the space suit. But if it's come to the point where the passengers are trying to fix the spaceship,
just sit and think of the astronaut application form, and Bart's filling it in, goes good with screwdriver.
But not only isn't there a height limit as well, because you won't fit in the seats of the Soyuz. I'm pretty sure I read that.
There is. You're right, actually. Yeah, because the Soyuz. So you have been around for a while.
Well, what's his name? Didn't he? The guy from the circus, Gila.
I think you have to be a bit under 5 foot. Gila
Circus went up, and he's a tall old boy.
Well,
I think there's probably a weight limit more than anything.
There is a weight limit, and I'm pretty sure there's a height limit because the seats of the Soyuz, there's no space.
Yeah, and there's no space shuttle anymore to give an alternate. So maybe the tall guy went up before you were forced to take the Soyuz back down.
Yeah.
Someone go on Twitter now and put Chris Hadfield, please come on our show immediately. We're all
correct us for all of the things we've gotten horribly wrong. Yeah.
I did contact him once for a laugh to see if he'd come on the show, but he never answered.
Oh,
I know.
So, to be fair, he probably never saw it. Don't take it personally.
I actually had a friend. Like, the reason the whole travel sick thing comes up is I had a friend who, it was a short-lived reality TV show around Ireland. So the idea was that this reality TV company, I think it was the same guys who did Big Brother, they bought like a little fishing trawler and they put a crew of people who had no idea how to make a boat go and a camera onto the sea, and they were supposed to circumnavigate Ireland. And my friend got so seasick that after 2 days, they actually forced him to leave the show. And the next day, they crashed in a rock and sank. That was the end of the TV show.
I can remember going to Ireland in a force 10 gale. That was horrible. The boat stank.
One of my earliest memories is when I was 3 years old, and I remember almost nothing from then, but it was being stuck off Ross Lair, not allowed to dock, while bobbing around, and everyone...
That's the worst.
Yeah, that's what happened to us. We couldn't dock. And then when we actually did pull into Dublin, it was like glass.
Oh, well, at least it sorted itself out.
And it was lovely and sunny, but the night was awful.
Yeah, the worst. The only time I've ever been, I'm pretty good. So I did a thing to France, and on the way back from France, they got the stabilizers out. The boat was pitching and rolling all over the place. There was people sat in the corner of the rooms puking up against the walls. It was horrific. And I'm walking down the middle of this dance hall with a grosh.
The bar was still open.
I'm absolutely fine.
Don't put it down or it'll be gone.
No. But then, so I'm fine. It's like I've got my sea legs. I'm good. And then I went sailing with some friends and I was out and I loved it. It was great. And then they said, right, we're doing pork sandwiches. Who's doing it? I said, I'll go down and cook. So I went down and cooked these pork sandwiches. Within a minute, I'm back up going, I can't do it. I just can't do it. And we were anchored. If we'd have been moving, I think that'd have been all right. But we were anchored and we just got that kind of, you know, that wobble. That rotation.
So the low frequency wobble completely messed with you, or it's evil seas. No bother.
Yeah, no, evil seas, piece of cake, mate. Absolute piece. And I was inside as well. I wasn't even outside, which is the problem usually, because if you've got a horizon, I remember watching a program on the BBC, and they put lights on gimbals. So the shade would actually create a false horizon around the room. And then they found that the sailors didn't get seasick because of it.
That's genius.
It is. And all it was just like,
because if I have to go somewhere by coach, I will be there really early so I can sit in the front row or two so I can see out the front window of the coach and then I'll be fine.
Yes.
But put me down the back of the bus. No.
Yeah, no, that's it. I think Ashley's a good point, because rugby tours probably helped, because you're always on a coach. You're always shit faced. And
you're fighting for the back of the bus. You're not fighting.
Well, you're fighting for the toilet usually after the first couple of days.
But they're down the back, so.
Yeah. No, they're kind of in the middle. And then someone's in there and locks themselves in there because they're puking, and then you've got nowhere to go, so you end up peeing in the footwell.
How did we get from you can now pay 22 and a bit grand per day to go up space and have the experience of a lifetime?
So, to chuck up or chuck out, it's just deep, man. That's exactly it.
Yeah, sloshing around bodily fluids. How did my story get this derailed?
Monetization options, then. So, tourist is obvious. Experimentation is obvious, but there's got to be other ways. And we did have a few before we started. We did suggest that Ryanair may be taking people up there. You'd get close to the space station, but not actually there. Coin-operated toilets, said Deep Pan, in the space station would be a good money earner.
On a serious note, they actually are saying that manufacturing that requires zero-G would be permitted as well. So if you want to make something really cool you can only do in zero-G, you could, in theory, pay to have your raw materials shipped up, a couple of dudes shipped up to pull the lever or whatever they're supposed to do, and then pay again to have your stuff shipped down. So whatever it is, it'd want to sell for a pretty penny when you get back to Earth with it.
Didn't that make some graphene up there?
I don't know, but that wouldn't surprise me, because you're trying to get your one atom thick stuff going on. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty certain I read something about, I think that was an official sort of experiment. They made graphene up there.
Cool. That's such cool stuff, graphene.
Well, it is, but where is it? It was going to change the world, wasn't it, about 10 years ago? And now, where are we? They still haven't made any.
They have. They made shit.
Well, they've made it. They just haven't...
Really worked out how to use it.
Yeah.
It exists.
I've got the world's strongest material, but I haven't got a glue that's strong enough to stick it together.
I just don't think they've got anything to use it.
Well, I think the thought was capacitors that could be particularly good, but it's not quite reached the stage where it's commercializable yet.
Maybe Samsung could use it to make foldable phones.
Oh, or screens.
Actually, there was a story of a couple of weeks ago where there's a company making fireworks that they're going to put into space. They're going to fire them off the... and these fireworks interact with the atmosphere as they come down.
Is this an attempt to like burn some sort of chemical out of the atmosphere or something?
Yeah, they burn different colours depending on what they're made of and how they react. I think the story was on BBC website, and it looked quite interesting. Maybe they could take them and instead of putting them up, firing them up in little miniature caskets, and then they could be activated when needed.
Mate, you're going to get people buying them and taking out airliners. It's worse than the drone problem.
You've got to launch them into space first. And I don't mean that's going to be...
Firework manufacturing. There you go. Firework manufacturing on the ISS. That can't...
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Gunpowder. Your air marshal. You need to be an air marshal on the ISS.
According to our chat room, there are plenty of graphene applications. The problem is reliable manufacturing. So we can make them in ones and twos, but we just can't make a million of them.
Says Tom.
That's probably what...
I believe Tom. That sounds entirely plausible because... I think graphene has gone from a science problem to an engineering problem. But that doesn't mean it's solved. Always. It just means it's a different, it's someone else's problem now. Artificial meteor shower.
Japan, says Mullerbach. Yeah. Tom's put down plenty of graphene applications, but that's like, oh, I see what we could do with it is, yeah, all right, but it's only you could do that if you make it.
Yeah, so it's an engineering problem. How do we mass produce this stuff?
No shortage of ideas. Fantastic.
Artificial meteor shower in our atmosphere. Small particles would drop from a micro satellite and burn up as they fall to Earth. It's space enter. Is it space entertainment or a disaster waiting to happen? Ask Wired. I'm going with the latter. What kind of? I just don't drop it over us.
Well, you do it over remote areas like Burning Man or something like that. But you, even still, you got 40,000 feet. You got planes, haven't you? So?
Well, no, but they're talking about micro satellites to get these things up there, so a little CubeSat or something.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, that they literally make them, and then they fire them out the little satellite, and I suppose the little satellite then falls to Earth and burns up. And these things burn different colours depending on what content they've got in them.
So a Japanese student was watching the Leonid meteor shower and thought, oh, I know, I'll make me one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I don't know how they're going to get them up, but they're going to be for big events, apparently, like, I suppose, New Year's Eve and stuff like that.
Yeah, but you can actually, like, you can get affordable access to space now with the CubeSat format. So, you know, your CubeSat isn't very big, but you can get that up to space for a reasonable price. So they're talking here a 65-kilogram microsatellite. 500 kilometers, that's not that high, actually. Well, as these things go.
No, but that's what they're...
Huh. Wow. A membrane will open that will increase atmospheric drag, taking it slowly down to the target height of 400 kilometers, at which point they will detonate their doodad. Okay. Right so. This is up there with someone trying to laser write advertisements on the moon, really, isn't it?
I saw a film about that. Hitchcock, one of the worst films ever made.
Oh.
They could probably do that, the ISS. Have a foldable screen. Bring it out, and then for a few thousand pounds or what dollars, have your message displayed, and you can watch it by telescope.
Yeah, I was going to say you need a fairly good telescope as well.
Well, you need a fairly fast telescope as well to move it, because that's near on impossible.
Yeah, your drive motors would want to be extremely well calibrated, and you'd want to have a good bit of computer hardware driving those. And you'd want really high quality mount. That'd be
well. There are people, if you follow Virtual Astro at Virtual Astro on Twitter, he regularly posts pictures of that people have taken through telescopes of the ISS, and they've tracked it and shot it, and you can see the fins and all of it.
Yeah, but like, I mean, when you see it against the moon, you get a sense of its scale. So there's a few really cool shots of it silhouetted against the moon, and it really is quite tiny in our skies. So you want a ruddy big banner.
When you're down here, it's a little dot, isn't it? That just goes across the sky.
Have you ever watched it go over?
Oh, we've watched it regularly, and if I get the alerts on my phone, I go out and with the kids and come on, let's watch the ISS.
Yeah.
I've watched
it's particularly fun if there's a shuttle or something going nearby, because then you see a space chase. So if there's like a supply mission about to dock.
Yeah, no, you see Dragon catching up to it or something. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a good passover once, and I watched it through my binoculars. You could actually see it was the ISS. But other times I've seen it, and it's just been a light going over. But
well, you need the right
depends
brightness.
On whether it's straight over your head or not.
Yeah, it was really close. I think it's a closer. I got some good space.
It's fixed orbit, isn't it? 241 miles, or whatever it is.
But it was really
good. And it's basically it sweeps sort of arcs across. So sometimes it'll be straight over your head and sometimes it'll be, you know, quite a bit away from you vertically. So that makes a big difference. It's really fun to photograph, actually, because it makes this very elegant arc as it streaks across the sky. So if you can find a good foreground or something interesting, you can have a lot of fun with it.
Well, I've shot it because I was saying to people, everyone's, you know, when you get it and it's like you take a picture, and they do 30-second exposures and it takes ages and you got these points in between that are all broken up. And I'm like, why aren't you using bulb mode? Just open
exactly.
The lens.
No, like I have, I'm just going to dig it up here, but I did a 10-minute exposure because it takes a while to go across, and it won continuous exposure, and it's great because then you get whatever's on the ground exposed as well. So I went out to a little ruined church to have a really nice foreground.
If you go somewhere quite dark, it's excellent.
Yeah, because what you need to be careful of is that you don't have too, if there's too much light pollution in your long exposure, then you're gonna lose the sky. The sky's gonna go white, basically, which you don't want. So you do need a decent location. But I got away with it actually in the greater Dublin area, so you can get away with a lot. I'm trying to dig up this photo. Flickr wants me to change my account. Not now, Flickr. I can wait.
Well, we did a dark sky, didn't we, in the Elan Valley?
We did. We went all the way up to, what's it called?
Elan Valley. Well, we didn't go that far. Longmynd.
Longmynd, that was it.
Yeah, just pop that into the chat room there.
But it's not dark. It's not full dark sky, is it? It was only partial.
Good enough for us.
Yeah, so like you can see there, like you can get the exposure long enough to have noticeable star trails and to get your not lit foreground to be visible due to the starlight, so you can do cool things. That's the version before I bought a copy of lens correction software. I have a copy that isn't so distorted somewhere. Anyway, you get the idea. It's great fun. I actually printed that one out on canvas. It looked great.
I'm trying to find the one that me and Muller took because I got a picture of Muller with the Milky Way in the background.
Nice.
That was a long exposure. I just like, don't move.
Yeah.
But I did.
Well, the actual thing is you don't have to not move, right? Because if you get him to stand there for a second, shine a flashlight on him just for a second or two, and then he can do whatever he wants, then you have him.
Yeah, I went down in front of him and I fired off a flash gun.
You what?
You know what I'm saying. I went towards him with a flash gun, fired that off, and then came back to the camera. And I'm not on it, and he is.
And we did another one where I was messing around with lights at night to get a start, like a trail.
I did a photo walk in London, and they were going on about interesting stuff to do. And I said, well, we'll do a long exposure. Someone stand there. Someone flashes the flash gun from the side, and then that person walks away. We had like a 3-minute exposure, something like that, and it was on by Tower Bridge, on that long walkway there on the South Bank, and we fired it off, and it looks like you're teleporting in. You've just got the top half of the person, and the bottom half's gone completely.
The other thing I did, I think, at one stage was trying to experiment with, like, you know, writing stuff. So I think I did one. I just popped in the chat room with the Constellation of Orion with the 3-letter astronomical abbreviation, quote unquote, written in with me in a flashlight. Kind of fun.
Hang on a sec. Show it. There we go.
I think at one point I had this notion I'd do all the constellations with all of their 3-letter abbreviations. Then I think I got bored because I can only find one in my Flickr stream.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, you can have fun. A friend of mine got very carried away. He tried to write, there's a really beautiful place, and he tried to write the name of the place. It was like Tahado. So it's like this really hard to spell Irish name. And he spent ages trying to light paint it in and get all the letters right. And he would always, he only could do 30 seconds on his camera. So he'd hit go, he'd run, and he'd get as far as the third last letter, and the shirt would go, ka-dunk. No!
Yeah, no. Make sure you plan ahead. Have a practice in the garden.
Yeah.
So what are we doing then? What are we going to monetize? There's got to be experiments. There's got to be tourism.
I think tourism is the big one. I mean, the rich people with more money than sense, that has to be a market you can capitalize on.
Yeah.
Might be an interesting way to get a new president for America.
Money no object, mate. I'm up there. I'd be gone in a heartbeat. No,
you do it, yeah?
Oh, in a heartbeat, mate. There's nothing... To go up and gaze back at my planet would be... you know, I'm a child of Apollo, mate. So it's at my age, at 52, you know, I've got flickering memories of a little silver bloke stepping out of a capsule and the one leap for mankind. That kind of stuff. I was I'd have been three at the time, so I've got these partial memories. I remember mum and dad bought Life magazine and Time magazine and stuff with pictures on it of Armstrong on the moon, and it was a real big thing. And I remember sitting up with them as well from Apollo 13. That was another one. Late at night.
Are you listening to Kevin Fong's podcast on the BBC? Sounds
Fong's
out.
Good. Oh,
it's amazingly good. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it 13 seconds to the moon?
13 minutes to 13, the moon. So yeah. It's the 30-minute descent. Fabulous.
Yeah, I've been listening to that. Well, they've only up to episode 4 last time I checked.
Yeah. Mondays, they come out Monday, so we get to look forward to the next one on Monday morning.
Yeah.
Funerals, says Deep Pan. Space funerals, that's a good shout.
Isn't Scotty up there somewhere?
Yeah, they fired him out of a
rocket. Well, no, they don't fire him. They fire like 1/1,000,000th of his ashes. You have to get burned down here, and then you get a test tube of your ashes gets filled, and then that goes out there. It's not all of you. It's just a proportion of you. Roddenberry's up there as well.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. I wouldn't mind that.
Star Trek funerals.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't hesitate if I was dead. I wouldn't hesitate for a second to go up if I was dead. It's just I don't want to.
That's about only, 2 weeks. Only a bloke in Ireland could come out with that. Would you go up if you were dead? Oh, I wouldn't hesitate.
It'd be fine, you know. I wouldn't care.
You could see his ashes throbbing up, though, couldn't you?
I'd be first in line.
You could turn me into a meteor shower. Chuck me out as you're halfway up. That'd be fun.
What would you burn green?
Yeah. What colour would you burn, mate? Ah.
Rainbow. Black, yellow, red for Belgium, and throw in some green and orange for Ireland. Red, a bit of white. Yes.
Red, orange, fun. Yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet.
Not the whole rainbow. While we're at it.
Just come down as a pride flag.
Why not? What are you doing to celebrate pride? Well, I'm being killed, shot into space, and my ashes are going to be a rainbow shower in pride colours.
And then you sit there with your mates and go, okay, you win. I've only got some coloured laces for my shoes. Sorry. I can't
stop
that.
So far, the only thing I have is an Apple Watch strap. That's as far as I've gone.
And you only bought that out of guilt.
No, I actually thought they looked really good.
They do. They look good. They look all right.
Yeah, they do, actually. It's the Apple ones. I just wish they do the sports loop instead of the nylon band.
I want to say thank you to Deep Pan because he's been finding stories for me. I'm going to do the German circus one, but I can't do the other one that you've mentioned because I'm not supposed to know what I know, so I can't do it.
Ooh.
No. Can't do it.
He doesn't know what he doesn't know.
I'm not supposed to know what I know, so I can't do it.
Infinity and beyond.
That's cryptic and a half.
Muller, what did you bring as a story, mate?
Okay. I'll just paste it in now. YouTube's cocking up again, and they're upsetting people with their privacy.
There's something about their employees are afraid to speak out as well or something.
Yeah, I did consider using that one. But it's linked to this in a way, but YouTube has blocked some history teachers and said they're uploading hate speech when they're literally archived material of Adolf Hitler, which they use in history lessons.
This is the problem with algorithms, isn't it?
Yeah. So these poor teachers who have lost their accounts and all their teaching materials because of... YouTube hasn't got the common sense to realise it's 1940s footage that's quite freely available everywhere, and they're not teaching hate speech. As they say, they're actually educating people to try and prevent this kind of thing happening again.
Mm.
So yeah. It's a bit harsh, but it is linked to that other story about stuff being removed with LGBT, ABC, I can't remember all the different letters, but I didn't want to do that story because I read it and it looked a bit complicated compared to this one.
Well, it's a problem.
Said the bloke talking about infinity before we started.
Pretty stupid, really. What you need is some human intelligence, but that involves paying people, and they don't seem to want to do that.
Well, can't afford to do that. So, to be fair, I mean, it's to pay someone to sit and do something like this is horrifically expensive.
Well, I think to be honest, the answer is both, right? You get some AI to capture the stuff that needs that needs some human attention, and then some humans to actually, you know, yay or nay the decision, rather than automatically banning people without any sort of actual intelligence being applied.
It does need looking at, doesn't it? Because I mean, some of this stuff is taken from BBC documentaries. So what they're going to do, ban the BBC off YouTube? Just seems senseless to me.
Stranger things happen.
I presume they've corrected their mistake since, and everything's fine again. Please tell me.
No,
not so far. I think they're going to back down on this because I can't see.
Standing
really, but YouTube seems to be bumbling along, one catastrophe after another at the moment. So harsh, but it does seem a bit stupid.
Well, they're not doing themselves any favours with the advertising and that kind of stuff either, are they? Which is another issue.
Well, it seems far right groups can get their stuff on, but a history teacher can't get their stuff on about Holocaust.
Yeah. Wasn't there some YouTuber who got to keep his account even though he was being accused of being all hate speechy because, you know, the Google, like, he's saying horrible things, but he's allowed to. But you can't put actual historical material to help teach people about what really happened. It's nuts.
It is. I mean, I can look at the other story if you want, because it is linked to this, the LGBT one. I'll just go and find the link. I put it in the chat room earlier. But that's more about the company employees themselves, who are now scared to, who are basically scared really to say anything. I think they're thinking that the company and also some of their fellow colleagues will have right-wing leanings and have a go at them, which just seems to me...
The beginning of the end of Google.
Well, it's a bit concerning, isn't it, where you scared to speak out on things for fear of harassment from your fellow colleagues. I thought Google's supposed to be this nice campus where you all sat around drinking free coffee all day and typing on computers.
Did you see the screenshot in the Apple keynote? I need to show you this. It's like everyone just glossed over it, but Ferengi stood up and he's showing his he's showing his thing, and then he puts this up, and it's like ritual incense burning 7 a.m. Darkness unleashed 8 a.m. No one's actually goat yoga. If you're not.
I love how comfortable he is ripping the piss out of himself and that of Apple, because the bit on when they got to iTunes going away, I mean, I thought that was priceless.
Yeah, that was good. Ritual incense burning, darkness unleashed, goat yoga, darkness immersion lab, volcanic mud bath, binge black mirror, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
He's got taste in telly.
When you say goat yoga, does that involve him? No.
He's got an address here.
I don't
as
understand
well.
Goat yoga. Do you pretend to be a goat, or?
I think you take your goats to yoga, and your goat does the yoga, maybe.
Oh, but when you have some kombucha or whatever that hipster drink is.
No, there's addresses for all of this though. So Darkness Unleashed occurs at 408 Almaden Boulevard, San Jose, and Goat Yoga is at the Apple Fitness Center on 19500 Homestead Road, Cupertino.
That must be the address of the spaceship.
Must be.
That's ridiculous. It's wonderful, though.
Volcanic mud bath, 4 p.m.
Does it say where that is?
No.
Mount Etna.
He's obviously got one. And it's Craig Ferengi, mate. He's got a volcanic lair, hasn't he?
He must have.
I did take the mickey on Slack about it when they announced those new screens. And then the lady went, or somebody went, and the stone cost $1,000. And there was like you could actually hear the room go, you what?
Rhubarb, 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 rhubarb.
You know, then she had to go, woo, woo, woo. And everyone started going whoop again. But I just thought.
No, we're not doing that. We did that this afternoon and we pissed Bob off because we spent too long talking about the Mac Pro. So we're not talking about the Mac Pro.
Okay.
Seen a video of it before, says Ben Gillam. Goats climb on you while you pose.
What?
And he's put a link, the Deep Hand's put a link into goat yoga, which I really don't want to click other than it is YouTube, so it might be safe.
It might be.
If that had got something else in there, like a cryptic URL, I wouldn't be clicking it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at it. So they've got a mat, and they've got some goats, and they've got two very attractive young ladies. And let me just scribble ahead a bit.
Downward dog. Downward goat.
So they're doing yoga with like goats underneath their legs.
Monday.com. Oh, there's a bloody advert. Thank God.
Oh, and the goat went to sleep on the young lady. Very friendly goat.
Is that a post-coital sleeping?
Well, it's a...
it's not that kind of goat interaction.
About 1 minute.
The screenshot looked safe, says Ben. Oh, goat yoga, the screenshot looked safe. Honest, girl.
1:33, there's a goat posing on the back of the lady.
Well, I suppose there is like massages where people walk on you and shit, so maybe you can do that with a goat. But it doesn't sound very yogic.
No. Did yogis in the dark ages when it was all invented have goats walking on them?
Two girls, one goat.
That's Deep Pen. Well done, mate. That's might be show title. I can't find a pen. Shit.
Yeah, meanwhile, I've been reading this Google story on The Verge. This is horrible.
Yeah, it is. Cheers. I did paste it in Slack for other people to read, but I was going to come back to it if my other one was Nick, but I didn't think it would be.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, well, look, I'm not the world's biggest fan of Google anyway, but they've fallen a long way from their idealistic startup roots.
Yeah.
Do no harm.
The thing is, it's the people are scared about the co-workers having a go at them. Surely, if people are scared about what the co-workers say, then surely the co-workers should be spoken with and maybe advised about their conduct rather than the person making the complaint.
That's what HR is supposed to do. And the fact that some of the stuff has been leaked onto like right extreme Nazi sites and stuff, like doxing employees. What? That makes no sense for a supposedly forward-thinking company to be so retrograde. It's horrible.
I mean, one lady's already left the company over it. So I just think this is really strange. I would have thought that, as you say, Google being that kind of cuddly, friendly employer would have made it a safe place to work.
Yeah, it sounds like they've lost track of a lot of their values.
Certainly have. I'm looking at that. It's, I mean, if we'd have behaved like that in my previous existence, I'd have been sacked. End of.
Likewise, in my current, I just couldn't imagine in any modern work environment that kind of behavior being tolerated. It does not compute.
Yeah, especially as most of the senior
officers. Let's bear in mind it's a blog and it's a story and it might be written for the purposes of getting clicks as well.
True. Even if it's only half true, it's still worrying.
It is, but there might be something that started this off and it was like, no, I said this, not that. And, oh, okay, right, yeah, that's okay.
But it's a follow-up story to a Wired story talking about diversity at Google.
I was going to say that the amount of links in this story backing it up is kind of impressive because what you have here is a pattern of behavior rather than an anecdote.
You don't get many articles with footnotes.
Yeah, well, I mean, The Verge is good. It's, you know, The Verge isn't big on their fake news. They're not Bloomberg.
No, but they're guilty of click as well, though.
To some extent, right? Because otherwise you'd be a broke news agency.
Yeah. Good story, mate. My story. Thanks, Deepan.
Oh, you found one.
Is a German circus uses holograms instead of animals.
I heard this on the radio this morning. It sounds intriguing.
Well, I've got a picture. There's a picture there on the feed, and it does look absolutely stunning. Deepan's are exactly right. So this guy was inspired by Justin Timberlake performing with Prince at the Super Bowl, because obviously Prince has been dead for a couple of years. And he said, I've got to make that happen for us. So they no longer use live animals, of course. But he said instead of being denied the live animals, they're using holograms to do it. There's some fish swimming around the bowl that's in the center. And this is real. This is like a photo taken on an iPhone. And these things are cast onto...
I actually think that holographic elephant looks way cooler than a real one. It's like Star Wars meets the circus.
Blue elephant.
Yeah, you know, help me, Obi-Wan.
It's an X-Man elephant.
What's that? It's the Vegas group, Blue Man group or whatever. Blue Elephant group. Tour in Vegas.
I think that looks really cool.
It does look, it looks amazing. And then the fish looks really good. And the fish has got better colour quality to it. And there's a bit of shimmer on the next one. But I don't know whether that's because it's just a tracking or a scanning issue with the phone. But
I mean, technologically, to make such gigantic, there's got to be some impressive tech going on there too.
And it keeps the animal rights people happy, is what it says in the story. Ron Carley said their focus was on clowns, acrobats and poetic acts from start. So it was an easy transition to do this. Regulators are slowly catching up with the circus decision last month. The government passed a rule in the UK which bans circuses using wild animals, which is what the story's about. But it took a crew of 15 designers and software engineers to pull the whole thing off. Now they're hologram horses that appear out of nowhere, stampede around the circus ring, as well as elephants and even fish swimming around. 11 projectors to create the 3D holograms and using other projectors in their show. And the results are breathtaking. And even just the stills there do look amazing.
Oh, I'm well impressed.
All they need is a scary clown and that'll...
That put me right off.
And Deep Pan has pointed out the obvious, the circus won't smell of animal shit.
That is a really good point, yeah.
Oh, do you imagine though, if you got like a smell-o-vision type thing where when the animals were doing thing, you actually released an odour that made it smell like... No, I'm not talking about shit, mate. I'm talking about...
Give me some candy floss smell or something, please.
Smell of an elephant. You know, that kind of... There's a scent of elephant must or something like that coming through the...
Speaking of vomit, yeah.
No, you know what I mean.
No, I do know what you mean. Don't they do that in bakeries and stuff in supermarkets?
Yeah.
Release fake smells.
Eau de cuisine de France.
Wind Rider, how could you, mate? It's a smell-o-phant.
Smell-o-phant.
Oh, Jesus. Two girls, one goat, and a smell-o-phant.
This show's gone downhill.
Mate,
I'm genuinely really impressed at this use of technology, because the circus is about entertainment. It's not, the animals are there because they're entertaining, not because it's particularly about animals. So if you can put on an amazing show that gets bums on seats and it doesn't involve cruelty and shit, fantastic.
Is that cruelty and shit or cruelty and shit?
Both, actually. Well, no, because if you have a circus visiting the town, like, you know, they come onto your sports field or whatever and you have a bit of crack while they're there and then they bugger off and there's, you know, elephant dung and shit everywhere. Yeah.
Is there have you seen those bars on Instagram that they're advertising at the moment where you program them with pictures and the things spin round at high rate and flash in strobe with them, and then you get like a sneaker turns around or something like that, or a fish swims across in the field of it?
I have not, but that sounds really cool.
Oh, they look amazing. And you can see that the video that they shot is actual video of the thing working, but this thing spins around at high rates and it strobes, and as it strobes so high, at such a high frequency, they can rotate the... If anyone can find a video of these things, please stick it in the chat room and I'll put it up on the screen. But it rotates and then stuff, you know, shrinks and expands. And it's like the fans that used to have a message on them?
And yes, I'm assuming it's LEDs or something and therefore programmable, so you can do...
So they've got the 3D objects to rotate.
There was a thing some inventor guy did with a drone, a big long stick and a bunch of LEDs where he would... We're back to light painting, where he'd program in like a picture of Santa and his sleigh. He'd set his camera up to do a long exposure and then fly the drone through the shot, and then he would change the LEDs to print... Effectively light printing, to print like Santa and a sleigh across the sky in his long exposure photograph. It was really cool.
I did see I think it was on Click on the BBC, where some guy has got some drones and they fly in, They fly in formation.
Well, they did that on the Super Bowl, didn't they? For the American flag.
I think they're a German company. And they do like a firework display with these drones, and they fly with precision.
I'd rather that than chucking fireworks from space.
Yeah, but these things are flying around over your head.
Yeah, but, you know, the radius of damage they can do is much smaller.
I don't know. They're quite heavy things, these are. They've got like holographic sort of flashing LEDs on them. And they, as I said, they fly quite close to each other in sort of... I can find the link because it's been a while since it was on the TV.
And Deepan has just come up with something pretty impressive in the chat room there. But we could basically have, like, with holograms, you can have, like, dinosaurs and stuff. You could have Jurassic Park in your circus. No reason, you know, with a bit of CG, there's no reason it has to be real things that you're projecting your 11 giganto projectors.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I mean, you could actually have a guy standing there pointing at the anatomy of a T-Rex or whatever. The possibilities are endless. How expensive are 11 giant big projectors and a big tent?
there's a fair old bit in that, isn't there?
It might be a bit of an investment up front, yeah. But, I mean, somewhere like the Science Museum, you could really take this technology. I mean, you imagine the Christmas lecture has been delivered with this kind of technology at the presenter's disposal. Very powerful.
Yeah, I've posted a link to
YouTube. Here we go. Sorry. Here we go. Posting it now. So this is not very well in sync with the camera, but there's videos on Instagram that are a lot more creditable than this. This has got a shutter control issue, which is showing it. But
that's the problem with something spinning, and you're going to have a rolling shutter.
So the ones that I've seen on Instagram, imagine that black line that's flickering. That's not there.
Yeah.
There you go, Nemo.
Still impressive technology.
Oh, it's incredibly impressive.
Yeah. They're going for 1,000 soon. I think I've got the 1,000 one somewhere, but it's got B-roll on it.
The cost is not very high compared to it. It's about 160 quid you can buy them for on...
If I remember rightly, when I saw it on Click, the drones talk to each other, so they correct themselves, and all that the pilot has got to do is control one of them.
Oh, that's very clever.
Yeah. And he can pre-program the flight as well.
Here we go, that's a better picture.
So he hasn't really got to fly them, he's just got to be in control of the one, and the rest of them follow the other drone. And if they pre-program them, he hasn't really got to do an awful lot.
See, that's a lot better.
Is that the second one I posted?
No, the video I've posted there, but I'm always scared of clicking your links.
This one's safe. It's the 1,000 drone over Sydney and in China as well.
There we go. This is the Chinese province, Xinjiang.
That hummingbird really is actually stunning. It is. It's magical.
I'd love to see it.
Here we go. 1,000 drones flying in formation.
Jeez. As I say, when I saw the program, they're literally pre-programmed.
Oh, this is incredible. If you're not watching the video podcast, then you need to be, because...
I'll search them.
If you'd like to know Muller's link and you'd like to click on it yourself, though, because you're on audio, don't worry about it. Go to britishjetnetwork.com/chat and you can scroll to today's date, the 7th of June, and you can click all of the stuff that he's put on. But don't do the Google search for Isle of Man TT.
Those drones are absolutely magical.
They are, aren't they?
That is amazing. Oh, fireworks is nothing compared to this.
Yeah, he wants to send a firework in space and watch it burn up as it comes back.
Yeah, with more time and more people getting more creative, the sky's the limit. Oh, sorry for the terrible pun. The sky's the limit. It's fabulous.
Get them to deliver Amazon parcels when they're doing it.
Yeah,
when you're doing, you know, we have a package for you, and then they fly down and deliver your package.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Another one.
I'm not sure how good a podcast this is. Us looking on YouTube videos and sharing them with the world. But anyway, I'm sure it's great audio.
The audio people can go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat and they can look at them afterwards. So.
Yeah. Or they could just Google it. Google drones flying in sync with lights on. Yeah. And there's loads of them pop up.
Now imagine if you could get these together. You could have four of them and you could have Beatles tracks.
What?
Eh?
If you get four of these fan things, the circular fan things together that do holograms, then you could do you could get the Beatles back together. So there you go, that's extinct. I know two of them aren't, but...
Yeah.
It's good. Excellent.
Yeah.
That should have been my cool thing, shouldn't it?
Thanks for the story, Deep Pan. It was a good story. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by Tears Ho Host. They look after us. Now, a few of you have gone online and you've tweeted out, thanks at Tears Ho Host, supporting at British Tech. We need you to do that. We really need you to do that because that's all they're looking for from us. They want the brand recognition. So please, 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 you must, as the BTN Army, get out there. And I want lots of tweets, if you can possibly help it, that say, at TSO Host, thank you for supporting at British Tech. And do the same for Wirecast as well, because they give us the software that we're using here. And without them, we'd be struggling as well. So please do that. Please go out and give name checks for all of our people that look after us. And that includes Hoya, who give me my glasses and who've got a really cool thing coming up that I can't say. I haven't signed an NDA, so I could time a say, but I dropped Mark in it, which is not good.
Are they glasses?
They are glasses, funny enough. Yes.
This powers of deduction are amazing.
This much I can reveal.
They're space fireworks.
It's a special range of glasses. That's all I can say. Unless Mark tells me otherwise, I'll be asking him this week. Time for the cool thing. Starts off Bart.
So my cool thing is a new Apple Watch strap I purchased for myself, as modelled by my good self here, ably. These are from Urban Armour Gear, or UAG, and it's their active strap. So basically, I do a lot of cycling and stuff, so I'm always out and about, and I'm pretty hard on Apple Watch straps. And when the summer comes along, I really hate the Apple Sports strap because it gets all sweaty because it's so solid. So I'm always on the lookout for some sort of new fabric-based ones, but the Sports Loop isn't as rugged as I'd like it to be necessarily. So I picked up one of these. They come in like, you know, a really subtle black or what they call midnight, which is basically like a sort of a dark camo look, or they come in luminous orange. So of course I went with luminous orange because I'm a big child. They're comfortable. They're rugged and they look good. They're not cheap, but they're not horrific. €54.95 for the orange one.
So the people UAG have got a video on their website of the new product, and it's been playing now for probably as long as you've been talking anyway, so a good minute and a half, and I haven't seen a watch strap yet.
Yeah, but apparently I can go surfing.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how to surf, but now that I have this watch strap, I'm sure I can.
Yeah, because the surfing in Ireland's renowned.
Well, it is actually down the southwest, yeah, the Atlantic comes splatting into us, having, you know, built up giant big waves the whole way from US to us, yeah.
Are Hoya making peril sensitive sunglasses? No, they're not. Well, they might be, but they're not. Good kick, mate. Price?
The price is €54.95.
Woo!
Some amount of pounds
for a bit of seatbelt.
Yeah, you're right, actually. The fabric did remind me of something, and now that you've said it, yes, it is a bit of seatbelt.
Seatbelt for that. No, good pick, mate, like that. I want to know if it's longer, because the Apple straps are still too bloody short, and the long one's too bloody long, so.
Well, like, I mean, when I have it out at its longest, I really can get an awful, awful lot more than my wrist through it. Like, I think they're quite big. I think the website has... Oops. I think the website has measuring, so you might be able to check before you buy, but I think you should be good.
Oh, you're safe, mate. You can go scuba diving now.
Well,
yeah, excellent.
There you go.
No idea how not to kill myself, but my watch will be fine. I go scuba diving with my fancy new watch, I die, and then I get shot into space. That's the outcome of this week's show.
Excellent.
Yes. Try that all together.
The cycle of Bart.
Yes.
The Bart cycle.
Which I do a lot of, actually.
No, as in the circle.
Does he eat his shorts on the way?
It's a bit random.
What's for that one?
Yeah, obviously aren't on the same wavelength.
Muller, have a pick, mate.
Yeah, I've gone a bit boring this week, so I've not really bought anything for the last week or so. It's BBC at Sounds app. I know at the moment Google are not allowed to, if you're on Android, are not allowed to put the BBC podcasts out because apparently the BBC was moaning that they weren't giving them enough exposure on this app. I think that's been solved now. But if you do want BBC podcasts and Google haven't sorted their stuff out, I do recommend the BBC Sounds app. You can listen to the radio stations or podcasts. Well recommended.
And there are many great BBC podcasts.
Yeah, we talked about one, the moon one, or the land on the moon. There's the Hurricane, about the boxer who got accused of murder.
I would highly recommend More or Less if you want to, basically all of the garbage numbers that make the media, More or Less nips them in the bud and gives you the actual facts and the actual truth. Short but really fun. So BBC More or Less, highly recommend.
I'll have a look at that one. I need another one because I listened to Forest 404, which is a bit preachy, but it was all right. If anyone's had a chance to listen to that.
If you want to get really serious, The World This Week is extremely good. It's basically one topic explored in great detail. So this week's one was about the Rohingya, which I'd never understood, but I do now. Whereas last week's one was about, was last year's one about the tech industry and stuff like that. It's always exactly one topic and it's very deep, but you will understand that topic at the end of the 1 hour show. So that's another good one.
Cool. Did you see Bexley Park yesterday? They were live tweeting D-Day, so they were sending out intercepted Enigma messages at the moments that they actually happened.
Oh wow!
It was really cool. There was a lot of it was gobbledygook because it was in code speak that you didn't know exactly, but you got an idea. You know, planes firing at us at bomb drop from taking fire at.
They were moaning at one point that they couldn't shoot at the ships, could they? They were out of range. Mm. Actually, if you want to go to the Bletchley Park website, the whole day is actually in one big scrollable document. So you haven't got to go onto Twitter if you don't want to. Just go to the Bletchley Park website.
There was I like watching Sunday Brunch on Channel 4, and last week they had a guy came on who was like, I'm a historian from Bletchley Park. And you kind of go, oh, this is going to be dry. And he brought an Enigma machine and he showed you how the Enigma machine works. So basically they had a starting position for the three dials and everyone set the correct starting position. And then every time they clicked, this thing would tick over one space, but all the messages would go from the same starting position. So the trouble they had was that because they didn't know the starting position, they didn't know the rotations. So it was a really interesting, and he gave a live demo where they just spelt out a word. And it came back as four different letters. And then you put the dials back in the same position and type those four letters and the dials rotated and it came out as the correct word. It was brilliant. Really well. Great demonstration. Really, really good.
Going to Bletchley Park is one of the coolest things. If you're either a nerd, a fan of tanks and stuff, or a lover of Winston Churchill. And if any of those things are true, I can highly recommend Bletchley Park. The Winston Churchill Museum is nuts in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Easy to get to on the train as well, isn't it? Parks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's easy to get to. It's really easy to get to, actually, because we would have flown in from Dublin, grabbed a train into the city, crossed the Euston, and then the train out to Bletchley was like a few minutes walk to the station. It was great. And the Retro Beep is their computer museum where you can actually sit down in front of working ancient mainframes and old Apple Ones and stuff. Like, absolutely stunning. And of course, getting to play with an actual genuine Enigma is also amazingly good fun because it is kind of magical.
And they have the Lorenz machine there as well, don't they?
Yeah, when I was there, they were putting Colossus back together. It wasn't functional yet. But the Bombas are in there spinning away as well, actually. Yeah, and they were working on reassembling Colossus when I was there. And I think that's up and running now.
Oh, so I might need to train one of the days. I think it's from Birmingham. It's only about £40 return, which is nothing.
Yeah, that is good.
Yeah. It's not the Virgin don't stop there. They stop at Milton Keynes, don't they?
So yeah, you've got to get a Milton Keynes and change.
But the best one for me
would be London Midland.
No, it's not London Midland anymore. Yeah, it's London.
London. Well, I certainly got a train that London stopped Northern. And left Euston in London without me having to do any weird stuff. Just get on a train in Euston and get off in Bletchley.
West Midlands Railway and London Northwestern.
Yeah, that's the one. It's, they stop at Bletchley Park, where the Virgin one goes straight to Milton Keynes, and you have to get another train.
And then you're at Milton Keynes.
That's true. You might get run over by an autonomous vehicle at the moment.
Oh, are they doing tests? Does it not surprise me that they do that?
Yeah. I haven't seen one, but I was at the location last year where they were testing, and they were putting down warning signs everywhere. Keep your eye out, but these machines are supposed to stop. Little pods, I think.
Yeah, I was at a conference in the OU for half a week at one stage, and I have to say, I don't know of anywhere on planet Earth more soul-destroying than Milton Keynes.
I went down to watch a football game there, and
It is mile after mile of the same copy-pasted monotonous crap, followed by a stupidly ridiculous town centre that's straight out of some sort of Soviet dystopia. I found it soul-destroying.
It's all like little roundabout, but it still goes round in circles.
All right, I must be wrong.
I mean, look, I may have strong opinions on architecture, but I really hate
it.
I
didn't say it was an architectural minefield, it is an architectural minefield. It's not an architectural haven, no. I grant you that, but the roads are laid out nicely and there's not a lot of traffic jams, which are good.
No. Yeah, it was mostly on foot. I didn't enjoy it. Definitely. You know, I've been in conferences in way more fun places like Edinburgh and stuff. I did not enjoy spending a week in Milton Keynes.
I'll tell you what, Milton Keynes, their football stadium's excellent. It's a pity Milton Keynes play there.
Didn't Dons play there, though?
The Milton Keynes Dons do, yeah.
Well, they used to be Wimbledon, though. They used to be from Wimbledon.
There is a Wimbledon now, though. That confuses everything. So Wimbledon have restarted in Wimbledon.
Yeah.
But the Dons moved up there. But when we went there, we outnumbered their fans by 10-1, I think. It's a lovely stadium. Certainly makes St Andrews look pretty horrible.
My cool thing, before anyone forgets, because I actually got one, is rev.com. Rev.com is a dead simple site, rev.com. If you make a film, and I'm getting more and more requests from people saying it's got to have subtitles on it as an option. So could I post it? And then it's just like, and I tried stealing the ones off YouTube, but they do something that means that it's too hard to copy, so I can't be bothered to sit and re-edit it. And this place is $1 a minute, so if you make a 3-minute film, it costs you $3. That's simple as that. And actually the accuracy is really good. I was well impressed. So it comes back and it's got your captions on it, and you just take the SRT file and import it into Final Cut and you're done. Dead easy. Rev.com. Well worth the $3 to $8 that I spend on it whenever I do a film.
Oh, so you're classed as a foreign subtitle then?
No.
Yeah.
You get English at 1 per minute, and you can have written transcriptions as well, so you can get like a text out of it, a physical Word document out of it.
Can I ask you, does it work with Scottish accents?
I haven't tried, but it might do.
Well, they have you not seen that video on YouTube where people from Scotland are trying to talk at Alexa and getting nowhere?
Yeah, no. Before we get, we've alienated all the listeners in Milton Keynes. We're pissing off all the listeners in Scotland slowly. So before we get any further, Bart, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
You can find me at bartb.ie or at belgianirish.com. Pretty sure I have that set up now.
You've done it. Brilliant.
I did it. And I meant to mention it last time I was on and I forgot.
Awesome.
I bought it. I'm hoping I configured it.
Have you used a caricature?
I did. It works. Yes. BelgianIrish.com. It works.
Have you used a caricature on it?
I should change that picture of me with a big fat face with my caricature, shouldn't I?
Yes, you bloody should, mate.
That's a pretty good idea.
Thank you.
Could you send me the highest resolution version of that you have?
I already did. That's the biggest I've got.
Yeah, you did. But that assumes that I managed to not lose it.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I'll send you another. If I can get your email not to be bloody rejected.
Oh.
I can give you an email that works for him, don't worry.
Okay, right. Muller, where can we get a hold of you?
Muller Biker in the Slack room and on Twitter, and Muller999 on other places.
Sorry, do it again, because you're on screen now.
All right, sorry. Buller Biker on Twitter and in the Slack room, 999 on Instagram. If you want to use Bart's address, use the one that he replies to on...
Yeah, okay, mate, don't say it.
I'm not going to say
it. Don't say it out loud, please.
No, but there's a big conversation about it in there, the one that worked.
All right, mate. My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech. We're back on Thursday next week, don't forget, because if you look at the calendar on the live page, you'll see it, live.britishtechnetwork.com, and you can scroll down, and there's a calendar there you can subscribe to. And I'm pretty good at updating that as well. So if it changes, it is real that it's changed. So Thursday next week for the live shows, if you'd like to come along and watch. We're going to see if we can get Gazmaz back on, because he can't come on Friday. So Thursday might be a day for him. Have a great weekend and enjoy it. I'm going to go and work tomorrow at a fair over in Oldbury, and I'm going to get pissed on from a great height because it's going to absolutely bucket down.
Well, they have holographic elephants on it.
Trying to keep cameras dry in the pissing rain. My favourite day. Have a great weekend, because I won't. Thanks.
Aw, best of luck with it anyway, Ewan.
You amateurs, mate. You sit there and you, it's a little bit of rain. I don't think I'll bother going. I don't get a choice and I have to go out. I've had my camera shut off.
Did you get paid?
Yeah, but I've had my I've gone out at places and at like 2 o'clock in the morning, it's hammering down with rain and my camera switched itself off. It's just like I've had enough and it just switches off. I don't know if it's got like a water sensor in it or what, but it's just switched off and I can't get it back on again. If the water got in the contact on the battery, I couldn't tell. And in the end, I just said, stuff it. I'm going to go home. So I ended up doing half a day, went home, came back the following day in glorious sunshine and finished it off.
Can't you get like an underwater encasement for it?
Yes, but it's not underwater, so you get spots all over the lens just the same way, mate. The great thing about underwater enclosures is you're underwater, so you don't get any drops.
No water good, all water good, some water bad.
Okay. Yes, that's it. And all water and some water on the lens is bad as well.
Ah.
And the other thing as well, if you shoot stuff in the rain, it just looks grey, because especially if there's, because generally you've got dim light because it's raining.
Yeah.
And then, your shutter speed's down. And if your shutter speed's down, it just goes into grey streaks because it falls pretty fast rain. You won't capture it at a 60th. So.
Yeah.
There you go. Free bit of advice. I'll carry on recording for everyone on the podcast. See you next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.